And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and for Santa Barbara counties. And we feature interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. And if ever you should miss one of my interviews or want to catch the full interview, you can find it on my website, brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com. That's where I keep archived all of the past interviews that I've done, along with some of the notes that I have from the interview itself. We're waiting and hopefully trying to talk to Stephanie Powers about her latest book, One from the Heart. We've had some difficulties getting a hold of her. She is there, but for some reason her phone is not working, so we're going to move on with our theme today, which is following the rules, breaking the rules. All of my guests are sharing rules, some of which need to be followed and some of which need to be broken. My first guest explained the rules that everybody needs to learn in order to understand and communicate with others more effectively. We discussed the findings in her book, Understanding Other People. My second guest was Stephanie Powers, and unfortunately that interview did not come off. If it had, we would have talked to her about her fantastic life and her memoir, One from the Heart. And Stephanie Powers, as you know, is an actress both on television and on the movies, but in addition to that, she's also a stage actress too. My next guest is a lawyer, human rights advocate, and an educator. He's the executive director of the 2048 Project at the University of California Berkeley School of Law. We'll discuss the ongoing international movement for a document guaranteeing the enforceable human rights, the most important goal of the 21st century, and we'll talk about his latest book, 2048. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Kirk Boyd is the executive director of the 2048 Project. He's been a litigator with Morris and Forrester and a partner in the firm of Boyd, Huffman, Williams, and Urla, litigating primarily civil rights and environmental cases, including the United States Supreme Court. Kirk has a tie here with the local area. He's taught at UC Santa Barbara and at UC Berkeley, including courses on international human rights and international law, constitutional law, civil rights, and the First Amendment. Kirk also has his BS in political science from UC Santa Barbara. Following that, he got his JD, LLM, and his JSD from the UC Berkeley School of Law. Welcome to the show, Kirk. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on board, and thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. I always like to talk with thought leaders in the world of political and other as well. So let's start with, what is the 2048 Project, and it's about human rights worldwide. Give us some examples of human rights violations happening in the world right now, and why do we need an enforceable international guarantee of basic human rights?
Well, I think the best example I can give you is the one that's ongoing in Libya at the moment. And there was a woman who was there in Libya who was being interviewed. And when she was asked what it was all about, she said, "This is about fundamental human rights. This is about our right to free speech and education and assembly and health care." And I think that summarizes what 2048 is all about as well. And at the end of World War II, there was this move to put an end to war by creating a set of fundamental rights that all people in all countries were entitled to. And that was led by Eleanor Roosevelt and others, and it included all of those rights that that woman so articulately described and more.
All right. Well, but in 1948, this document that you allude to, the United Nations General Assembly adopted a Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was a deeply inspiring document. It's been translated in over 300 languages and dialects. Why wasn't that document sufficient back in 1948?
Because it's unenforceable.
Okay. What do you mean by unenforceable?
Well, what happened was at the end of World War II, when you had the United Nations meeting here in San Francisco, President Truman said the first thing we're going to do, this is at the closing ceremony, is create an international bill of rights. And he was thinking of a bill of rights just like ours that would be enforceable in court. And what happened was they set out to do that, but then the Cold War got in the way and they couldn't get an enforceable document. And so the Universal Declaration is a wonderful achievement, but it's unenforceable. A lawyer like me cannot use the Universal Declaration in a court of law in just about any country in the world.
Right, and it's interesting because not all countries in the world have similar rules of law, even within their country. And I'll draw your attention to the World Trade Organization, which mandates trade and commerce. And we've got a lot of people that participate in that. However, the world courts have difficulty even enforcing WTO provisions throughout the world, don't they?
Well, they do, and I'm glad you brought up the WTO because I think that's a good example. If you look at the best protection for human rights today, it's the European Convention on Human Rights, where they have a Bill of Rights that applies in the courts of 47 countries. So lawyers like me use the same document in 47 countries. And the reason is because it's linked to the Council of Europe, which is the regional trade organization for Europe. So the deal is if you want to be in the economic club, you have to have a certain set of rights that applies in your domestic court. And there's no reason why we don't do the same linkage with the WTO with an international bill of rights and say, look, if you want to be in the international capitalist club, you have to agree to a certain set of rights that all of your citizens will have.
All right. We're talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody, author of the book 2048, Humanity's Agreement to Live Together. We're talking about the 2048 project, of which he's the head. So, Kirk, lay it out for us. What is the 2048 project? How did it get its name, and what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, 2048 is the 100th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And so what we're working on is an international bill of rights that will be enforceable in the courts of all countries by the year 2048, the 100th anniversary of the Universal Declaration. And that's why we have chosen that number. It's something for humanity to shoot for, right? And I think what you see in the Middle East is just dispelling these myths that there are people who in different countries who just don't want fundamental rights. It's not part of their culture. What we're seeing is there are oppressors that don't want them to have fundamental rights, but the people want them, and they're demanding them. So we're setting out a path by which people can participate together to draft the document, something tangible that can be enforced in court by 2048.
All right, but Kirk, if you look at what happened in Egypt, if you look at what's happening now in Libya, as well as its neighbor Tunisia, things are happening whether there's an international bill of rights or not. I mean, these things are taking place and revolutions, human rights revolutions are happening. Why do we need an overriding set of rules in order to either facilitate or help these types of uprisings?
Well, if you think about it, that what's happening is all this can go back to go back to Rousseau and the Enlightenment. We just have an evolving process where humanity is exercising its quid pro quo with those who govern, our social contract. We're saying, hey, you want to govern, there are some things that you have to provide for us. And I think this new generation is just a remarkable generation. I call them Generation Rights because they are not Generation X, they're Generation Rights. And they get out there and they're exercising it. And you never have rights without struggle. So the answer here is that at some point you need to institutionalize your rights. What's happened in Egypt is great, and what's happened in Tunisia is great. At some point you're going to have to institutionalize and protect those rights. It's the only way. It's as much a struggle to keep your rights as it is to create them.
All right, and why is it that we have to institutionalize them? I want to drill down on that because, as I see it, there are a couple of major problems that we're going to run into if we do institutionalize them. So why institutionalize them?
Well, it's because it's the only way that we'll ever fully enjoy them. If someone's out there abridging your First Amendment rights, the only reason that they're going to be stopped is you can come to a lawyer like me, and I'll go and I'll get a court order. Otherwise, you'd be helpless, as many people are in many countries. And so that's the evolving process, is to make sure that rights are truly enforceable. That's why the European Convention model is so much better for protecting human rights than anything coming out of the United Nations. You can have all the declarations that you want, and they sound really great, and they do serve a good purpose, but you can't use them to protect your rights in court.
All right. We're talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody. His book is 2048, Humanity's Agreement to Live Together. And I guess one of the follow-on questions, Kirk, that I have for you about institutionalizing this is, isn't this some form of litigation imperialism? I mean, the United States has more lawyers than any other nation in the world. Aren't we just creating work for the rest of the world's lawyers?
Well, to some extent, let's hope we do create work for the rest of the world's lawyers. If you want to write an article about the president of some country and you're going to get thrown in jail for it, or you want to write an article about the fact that someone in your country has won the Nobel Peace Prize and you're going to get thrown in jail, you ought to have a judiciary you can go to. And that ought to be something that we ought to strive for. And yeah, there ought to be some more work for lawyers to protect people like that. That's how you have a free society at the end of the day. So I can only hope that we have that kind of work being created for lawyers.
Okay, and I understand that, Kirk, but I guess, again, I just want to explore all of the ramifications of this. If we do have a country, and let's just choose China just to pick one, where somebody protests against the government, talks badly, they get thrown in jail, aren't we, if we have this universal right, this universal court where people can go and address these grievances, aren't we really limiting China's national sovereignty to enforce their own laws as they see fit?
See, I think that this is where we're really at this great confluence at this particular moment in history. And you know, this project actually started out at UC Santa Barbara. I want to mention that for all your...
Thank you. Yeah, I love the tie-in.
And I taught out there. I taught a course by one of the great professors, C. Herman Pritchett, Dr. Pritchett. I had the honor to go on and teach one of his courses, and I taught international human rights out there. And I think you just have one of the foremost international human rights scholars in the world there, and Richard Falk. So it's a great, and Frank Kelly, who used to be there, just recently passed away. That there's a long history in your area of people working on this document, this International Bill of Rights in particular, and human rights as well. So that's an aside.
But an important one.
But an important one. And I hope that your listeners will take a special interest in Google 2048 and take a look at our website and our work to see how it's extended beyond just Santa Barbara up to Berkeley and to Geneva and other locations as well, to see how what's originated from Santa Barbara has made its way internationally.
Now, but back to the question on national sovereignty, because this
right.
really does become an issue. What you're proposing is an overriding a document, an overriding set of rules that can be enforced. But they do it does trample on individual countries' sovereignty to enforce their own laws. So talk to me a little about that, if you would, please, Kirk.
Well, what's happened is that we have the emergence of a set of universal rights that supersede any national law and national sovereignty. If you're going to go and create slavery in your country, perhaps under the days of Hitler, he would say, this is national sovereignty. We'll do this. We'll do what we want. Stay out of it. Well, ever since Nuremberg, our society, our global community has been evolving beyond that to say, hey, you know what? There's a set of rights that everyone has, including free speech, so that when they're in Liberation Square in Cairo, they have the right to be there as human beings. It doesn't matter what the national sovereignty is. This is a human right that transcends that. And that's where we are right now in the world. It's a very healthy thing, and it's been underway since after World War II.
Okay, and I appreciate that. We're talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody, author of the book 2048, Humanity's Agreement to Live Together. And I think that this is a noble goal. But looking at it, aren't we just looking at what is currently fashionable, and I'm trying to find the right words here, Kirk, what is currently our belief system today, and we're imposing that on the world. But let's think back and use the example of slavery that you gave just a moment ago. You know, in Roman times, and as recently as the 1860s in the United States, slavery was considered acceptable within the society. That we would be culturally insensitive to some societies if we would go in there and talk about upending slavery. And, of course, that was one of the fundamental reasons for the Civil War here in the United States. But it's all a question of perspective at that moment. What's to say, Kirk, that 20, 30 years down the road, by the time we hit 2048, our perception of individual freedoms will have changed during that span of time?
Well, I think that it will change, and I think it's an evolving process. And to some extent, it's true. You have a variety of influence that come to bear on a particular country, and I don't think it's just Western influence. This is what I love about what's going on in the Middle East right now, is a lot of this is spontaneous combustion from within. These are people who want their fundamental rights, and they're exercising them, and it's not because of Western influence. It's because of shared values that we have. And really, one of the worst things is if people feel that this is some kind of a Western imperialism, because it's really false. And it, that claim is being made as a way, if you look at our draft document, and I really hope that your listeners will do this more than anything, is that when you Google 2048, we come up first, and then when you get to the homepage, you see on the left-hand side that you can sign the document, just mm-hmm. like you were James Madison or anyone, or Eleanor Roosevelt, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's a personal choice that each person makes. So I don't care if you're in China or if you're in Ventura. You can make that decision for yourself. What I don't like is when people say, oh, this is cultural imperialism. Well, bull, right? I'll leave off the ending off that because we're on the
Thank
radio.
You. We are on AM radio.
We are on AM radio, but I think that the ending would be totally be appropriate in some respects, because it assumes that people can't make up their own minds. So I encourage your listeners, go read that document. It'll take you 15 minutes at the most, and then sign it, or explain why you won't sign it. You can do either one.
Oh, so there's an option there to explain why you're not signing the document, or if you choose not to sign the document. How many people have dissented and not signed the document and given reasons for that, and what would be some of the reasons that they've given?
Well, you know, we've had lots of comments over the years where people have had strong dissent, and we welcome that, because the whole idea is to craft a better document.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want dissent. This is my book, 2048, is about that, encouraging there to be a dialogue with all different professions and all different viewpoints. And so we've incorporated that. We've just recently created this ability for people to sign the document. It's only been up for 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is new. The Model United Nations is meeting at Berkeley this week. There's 1,400 students that are using the book and focusing on the document. And so we decided that we wanted to let students think for themselves as if they were and they are drafters, Billy, in a really real way. Right? Their contributions to their thinking about the document are the same as the professors that are working on the document. It all goes into the same pool for consideration, and in this way, everybody gets to contribute to the process.
Okay, good. We're talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody, author of the book 2048, Humanity's Agreement to Live Together. All right, Kirk, so let's project forward to 2048, if we can, and let's say that the project goes ahead as you planned. Tell us, you know, how is the project good for humanity along the metrics of world prosperity, world education, world trade, and world peace? How is this going to advance us as a species, the human species?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in the book, I don't know if you've had a chance to take a look at the book, but in the book there's a diagram that shows a chart of all the dots that represent our total military expenditures now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And our weaponry. And we're spending $1.6 trillion a year as an international community. So every time there's a movie like Superman, Waiting for Superman, it's about our education system or whatever it is, people need to realize that the reason why we don't have these other fundamental rights, whether it's health care or education, it is because we're dumping, as a society, as an international society, we're dumping most of our resources into preparing to war with each other. And that's where 2048 and this whole dynamic that's evolving is going to change everything. Because all we have to do is reallocate 1% of our annual spending, our annual
and military spending
from each country. Right.
Well, I mean, that would be wonderful if we could. But again, it comes back to this whole national sovereignty thing. Simply because you have this overriding 2048 document and we all agree to live together, that still isn't going to solve all of the little border disputes and things that we have that are the current causes of war in the world today, is it, Kirk?
You know, it actually will.
How so?
It actually will. For one, those are becoming fewer and far between. And the main thing is, and Tom Friedman's written a lot about this, is that when you create societies in which people interact with each other through the rule of law, as opposed to the rule of force, you save a lot of money. And you create a much healthier situation. And this is, I really think, the most remarkable thing. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 52.
Oh, we're in the same age group.
Okay. So our generation, I'm sorry to say, is very myopic and when it comes to this whole nation-state perspective. I love this generation rights. We are in the midst of this first generation that sees itself as part of an international community. And they don't like the fact that all these resources are being wasted and life's such a struggle for them. At the same time, the environment's being ruined.
Well, these are our children, the ones that we brought up to, you know, play sports and everybody gets a trophy for participating. And so I can understand how they would then project that out onto their worldview. But I want to come back to what you were referring to with Thomas Friedman, the rules of law, Kirk, because I think the rules of law are very important. However, rules of law threaten a very fundamental group of leaders in this world, those that are in positions of power that are corrupt, whether, you know, they are Muammar Gaddafi in Libya or whether there's some other despot in some other part of the world. If you've set up a country where you're siphoning off all of the money and you don't want rules of law because rules of law are going to upset what you've built.
Right.
I mean, that's the fun. And it's hard when you're in charge of the military for people to rise up against it because people's power comes in part from the number of people that they get. But, you know, guns sometimes speak louder than words. So talk to me about the rules of law in areas where rules of law are not in place today. And we can all name those countries, whether it's Cuba, Libya, and the list will go on and on and on.
Yeah.
How are we going to change that governmental structure so that they get more in line with your 2048 project, the humanity's agreement to live together?
Boy, you're seeing it right now every night on the television. You're seeing the emergence of the rule of law. When these people are talking about their fundamental rights and throwing off these despots, it's because they've had all their resources drained, and so you're seeing a very grassroots manifestation of it. What you're also seeing, particularly through the European Convention, this linkage I told you about to the Social Charter and the WTO, is that this really is an opportunity to say to the capitalistic global economic order, okay, this is what we're going to have, and in order to have that, there's also a set of rights and laws that apply. And a lot of businesses want this. When we launched the project, one of the speakers, our keynote speakers, was Robert Haas from Levi Strauss.
Yes.
And so businesses have an interest here, too, in saying, hey, we need a system of global law so that we can do global business. And so I think that you're seeing the emergence of this rule of law on two levels, one at the grassroots level from this generation right, is remarkable, and two, at an economic and business level. There are a lot of good people in business that favor the rule of law.
All right, we're talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody. Kirk, in that answer, that creates two more questions for me, and I'm going to start with the first one, and let's look at a real-world case example, and that is the country of Iraq, okay, making the transition from a despot, a tyranny, to trying to be based on the rules of law. I don't think Iraq is there yet. I mean, this is a troublesome thing because even though a government wants to instill a government by the rules of law, there are still a lot of things that get in the way, and I'm going to cite Iraq as the grand example. So play it out for us. What do you think is going to happen in Iraq? How will that eventually settle down and gravitate more towards your thesis, humanity's agreement to live together?
Well, I think what's happening is that if there are regional systems of law that are emerging besides the European Convention that applies to those 47 countries, you have an African Convention on Human Rights, you have an Inter-American Convention, and they have not yet become as strong as the European Convention, but they are growing in power, and I do think this is the natural progression of things. And even in the Middle East, you have the Arab Charter that has been adopted. And it still has a ways to go, for sure, but it, too, is a regional type of an approach to the rule of law that I could see emerging over time, and I would expect that it will emerge over time. And so that's where you can't just look at Iraq, one particular country. Really, if you want to have a genuine emergence of human rights, you need to look at it transnationally. And that's where you really, at the end of the day, come to the true enforcement and application of human rights for all people.
All right, we're talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody, author of the book 2048, Humanity's Agreement to Live Together. And now I'll come to the second question that came out of the answer that you gave just a moment ago, and that is when you had Robert Haas was speaking to the group and how business is in favor of this. I would agree with that. In fact, I'm seeing a shift, and I want you to comment on this. I'm seeing a shift away from sovereign governments and individual companies, more towards corporations actually running the world. And I'll give you an example. In China, right now, Microsoft has a huge R&D facility there. I don't remember how many hundreds of people, smart Chinese, that they are employing there, paying really, really good wages. And when we were having a little tiff with China a few weeks ago, our government stepped in and said, you know, we'd really like you to revalue the yuan. And China kind of thumbed its nose at us and said, yeah, we'll do that when pigs fly. However, when Microsoft goes in there and says, you know, we'd really like this to happen, and whatever that this is, because Microsoft's employing 700, 800, 900 people there, all of a sudden the Chinese government sits up and pays attention. There's an example where Microsoft actually leverages its power more so than the United States government and our own Secretary of State. So I guess I'm asking, as we become more corporate, as the world business's interests become more global in nature, isn't it just going to naturally follow that we move towards rules of law because businesses are going to want to enforce their contracts and enforce their agreements in all parts of the world?
Absolutely. I think that one of the strongest supports for, and I write about this in the book, that's available in all the Santa Barbara bookstores, by the way, and Ventura and Borders and the rest of it, that it's about the businesses realizing that it's in their self-interest to support a bottom line through an international bill of rights. I'll give you an example. You have Nestle or you have Levi's, these other companies that, because of pressures from their purchasers and their customers, that they have to adopt these voluntary codes of conduct. And when they do so, they're put at a disadvantage against the unscrupulous competitors that don't have those codes. So if they support an international bill of rights, what it does is it forces their unscrupulous competition to come up to their level. So you actually have a financial incentive at this point for these businesses to support an international bill of rights. In addition to the fact that I think there are plenty of people in business with children just like ours who actually would like to see a world that's much more respectful of the environment and much more peaceful, and they realize that it's a race to the bottom because you got to survive in business. And without a new bottom line through a bill of rights, those things are going to continue to happen.
Well said. We've been talking to Kirk Boyd, everybody, executive director of the 2048 Project, and he's also the author of the book 2048, Humanity's Agreement to Live Together. Kirk, I know you've given out the website before, but please, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your project, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Sure. Well, just if they Google 2048, we come up first, okay? 2048 Project, but then also we're at www.2048.berkeley.edu. And what would be a great help is that I would love to see people sign the document, okay? Take a look, read it, decide for themselves. But if there is an international movement afoot and people are willing to enter into an agreement to live together, I want your listeners to think about whether they would join in such an agreement.
That's wonderful, Kirk. Thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.